Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, a community radio station right here in Kansas City. We are going to, well, we're going to touch on a little different topics than we usually do. We usually talk theater or music or sometimes other things as well. Today, we're going to talk about sci-fi. It's exploding.
It is.
The industry is just exploding. And this gentleman, along with some colleagues, has come up with some new ideas on how to present it. His name is Jason Hunt. He is with the organization Sci-Fi for Me. And he's going to tell us what they have coming up. They're, I guess, expanding as far as their video production and things like that. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks for having me. Tell us
about Sci-Fi for Me.
Well, the quick Reader's Digest version is that we're an online multimedia magazine. We do written articles on our .com. We do video. We do podcasts. We're essentially a similar type of news site like you would see, you know, covering just the regular things like Fox News or Time or CNN or any of those, except smaller and focused on a very specific niche. We cover science fiction, fantasy, and horror, and that includes video games, board games, comic books, books, movies, TV. So we do reviews, we do interviews, we do live events. And this year, we're getting ready to have our 10th anniversary. We've been around since March of 2009. This month, we're relaunching with a new brand, with a new lineup of programs across all of our channels. So it's an exciting time for us, and a lot of opportunities that we have that we haven't had before, and we're looking forward to it.
Tell me, when you first began, what was the idea behind it? And I assume things have evolved over 10 years.
Oh, yes. We started in February of 2009. The Sci-Fi Channel was changing their brand. They made the announcement that they were changing to Sci-Fi with the new weird spelling S-Y-F-I. Online response was decidedly negative. You had a lot of people that were looking at it as the network abandoning 17 years of a successful run with fans of the genre, and a lot of people were thinking that they were trying to move away from science fiction and become another USA network. And I had the idea at the time, you know, a lot of discussion boards, a lot of people were saying, why can't we just have a channel that's just science fiction? Because at the time, they were doing reality shows, they were doing ghost hunter shows, they were doing all sorts of things. Wrestling was on the Sci-Fi Channel. I mean, it wasn't strictly a science fiction channel anymore like it had been when it started out as a local cable channel in Florida. The idea that I had was, well, what if we were to come up with a new sci-fi channel? And, you know, resources being what they were, and you're not going to be able to do, just build a new cable channel from scratch. Well, why couldn't it be online? And this is back before Netflix and Hulu and all of these digital channels that you've got now. You know, I had this idea that we could be a new sci-fi channel on the web. Of course, it didn't work out that way. But that was the starting point. And so, you know, February 2009, Sci-Fi Channel announced their change. In March 2009, we launched Sci-Fi for Me. And it essentially was a blog in a basement to start with. It was just me with my computer, and I was reaching out to a number of different, you know, publicity representatives and media sites and getting on the list and basically just building that network of sources and resources and doing, you know, reviews as we were able to do. You know, they'd start sending me books, they'd start sending me videos, and we'd start getting into screenings. And it built from there. We've got an all-volunteer staff. We've had, over the last 10 years, we've had reporters in not just Kansas City, but also in Dallas, in Corpus Christi, in Los Angeles, New York, Krakow, Poland. We've had some people there. So it's, like you said, yes, it has evolved quite a bit. We've added the video component. We've added podcasting. It's getting to be for a while, it was an unmanageable beast for a little bit. So we've kind of reshaped and remolded and come up with a new plan for 2019.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, it sounds like you've got a lot of different facets to it. Is one of the facets any more difficult to manage than some of the others?
Well, the live events, I think, would probably present the biggest challenge right now, because we have developed a new model for covering events. A lot of times when you go into these comic cons, you go into the comic book conventions, the horror conventions, media people will go in and they get two passes. They go in for maybe a day and a half, or even half a day. And especially the local TV stations, and they'll go in with the camera and the reporter, and they go shoot the cosplayers and look how all these funny people are, and that's it. They wrap it up. They do a package for the 10 o'clock news, and they're done. In 2016, we came up with a new model. We decided to try to live stream in the same way that broadcast networks do with major sporting events or political conventions. We want to be on the floor, have our anchors on the floor, have a space there, have reporters out on the, you know, out in the crowd and going out to the panels and coming back, and doing it as a major investment of time and resources for the entire event, not just come in, shoot a couple of things, and then go away. And the first time we did it was the World Science Fiction Convention when it was here in Kansas City in 2016. And a lot of people had a challenge wrapping their head around what it is we wanted to do until we actually got out there and started doing it. And we ended up shooting 53 different interviews with authors and comic book artists and writers and illustrators. And it was unprecedented because nobody had ever done it before. And nobody's done it since, where, you know, the World Science Fiction Convention, for those who aren't familiar, that's where they announced the Hugo Awards, which is sort of like the science fiction literary Oscar. They even had a hard time understanding what it was that we wanted to do until we got out there, and I think we were maybe 2 days into it before people really started to figure out that we were live on the air here from, you know, from Bartle Hall. Wait, you guys are streaming now? You're doing this now? Yes. And people can go on our YouTube channel and they can see us right now. And when the light, you could see when the light went on with these people that oh, we can do an interview. Yes, come sit and we'll do an interview. So that became the precedent for us. And we did it again at Planet Comic-Con in 2017. What our hope is to do more of that from more events this year. We're going to be at C2E2 in Chicago. We're hoping to be at Star Wars Celebration, which is also going to be in Chicago a month later. We've got our application in for San Diego Comic-Con. We've talked to Planet Comic-Con about coming back there for their 20th anniversary show. So we're trying to get out on the floor of events more often, more frequently this year, so we can do more of that as live video, not just go in, record an interview or two, and then get out.
So we're speaking with Jason Hunt. He is the editor-in-chief of the new, well, not new, Sci-Fi For Me.
It feels new.
Sci-fi4me.com, by the way. I know you want to know that. You're actually 10 years old, but you're changing some things now, and that's probably why you want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, we spent the last year essentially dark. A few years ago, switched over to a WordPress platform for the design of the website. And in that evolution, we keep adding plugins and, you know, different features and tools that we could use to manage the site. And one of the things that had always been a challenge was trying to figure out how much of an audience we actually have, how many people are actually coming to our site. We see all this traffic, all these numbers. And WordPress numbers are different from Google Analytics numbers. They're different from Facebook numbers. They're different from Twitter. All of the different statistics showed a completely different picture. And we finally got a plugin that could differentiate between bots, the automated scripts and the search engine stuff and the malware and the data mining and those kind of things with actual people. And our audience was 95% bots. And at that point, we said, okay, it's time to take a break. So we went dark for about a year. And when Planet Comic-Con announced their dates for the upcoming show here in 2019, they made a point of saying, this is going to be our 20th anniversary show. And that got me thinking, well, that's going to be our 10th anniversary. It kind of doesn't make sense that we're dark for our 10th anniversary. What if we came back? And It was a very dangerous thought for me. I ended up spending maybe another month putting together about 30 pages of notes of what it would look like for us to come back. And that's where we are now.
Okay, this event is coming up in the spring then, the where and when for that. They might want to see you things live on the floor, so to speak.
Planet Comic-Con is at the end of March. We're still talking to them about what our presence is going to look like out there. So we don't have a definite plan there yet. If you want details on that, you could go to planetcomiccon.com. But that's a completely different entity. We're not involved in planning that one. We just show up with our cameras and plug in and start doing what we do. As far as our stuff goes, we are starting with new programming this month. And one of those is a show called Good Morning Multiverse, which is going to air on Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central. And then we have the return of the H2O podcast, which is myself, Tim Harvey, talking about all sorts of different topics that are in the genre. And that's on Saturdays at 2. And then we've got our Star Wars show coming back. We've got, eventually, our Star Trek show will be coming back. We have a new show focused on Doctor Who. It's called TARDIS Sauce, which is going to be running every other week. And that's one of our new things. We're going to try to do a lot more collaborations this year with other content creators. So TARDIS Sauce is a collaboration between Sci-Fi for Me and the Traveling the Vortex podcast, those guys out of Topeka. And they had been talking about doing more video, and we came to them and said, hey, we've got this idea for a video. They say, hey, that's perfect. We can talk with our hands. So that marriage of effort, you know, since they have already got a track record as a Doctor Who program, and now we're coming in with a Doctor Who program that integrates and incorporates that, I think that's going to be a very productive partnership for both of us, for both groups.
Always working together on projects is collaborations, as it were, has worked for lots of groups in town, especially the dance groups in town.
Yeah.
And I don't see why it couldn't work for your type of thing as well.
Well, and that's one of the things that if you look at all of the videos, the tutorials, all the YouTube experts, and you know, here's how to get 10,000 viewers overnight. They're always talking about collaborations, and it's never been something that we've been able to pursue before, because the challenge has been for us, if we don't have that much of an audience, what do we bring to the table? And we've got talent and skill and resources as far as equipment and that kind of thing. But if we're not bringing an audience to the group, you know, to that partnership, it's a little bit more of a challenge to put a value on what we can contribute. So we've been hesitant to do that. But this year, we're just going to just dive in and get a little bit more aggressive about pursuing those opportunities and creating opportunities so that maybe there's some synergy there between the two creative units, you know, us and whoever it is that we're partnering with, that, you know, we can share audiences and build them up together.
Did you have a schedule in mind? And I only ask because people are listening right now. They're saying, oh, where can I see some of this stuff?
Everything is going to live either on our YouTube channel or on Twitch. And there is going to be some other things coming down the pike, because Instagram has recently launched their own TV platform. So we're developing some programs for that as well. But YouTube.com or Twitch.tv / Sci-Fi for Me is where everything lives. And Good Morning Multiverse, H2O Podcast, TARDIS Sauce, Salacious Crumbs, Trailer Park, which is another new program, pretty much all of that is going to live on our YouTube channel. And then we're going to have a couple of other shows that are gaming-centric that are going to launch or return on our Twitch channel a little bit later on in the year.
So people can get involved as far as games. They can see live feeds sometimes.
Yes.
For instance, from the convention is going on. You probably will have a virtual storeroom of things on the YouTube channel that they can just click on and see. Do they have to get a membership to do that?
No, everything is free. And we have links from our com site that'll go to all of these as well. But you know, if anybody needs to do any kind of a search, if they're, you know, if they're on YouTube, they can just search Sci-Fi for Me, and we're right there.
So you have a number of different concepts here. Yeah, I guess the challenge is to mold it all into something that can stay organized and
right.
Make sense.
Well, the challenge is really making sure that we've got enough manpower.
Or woman power. Don't get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, person power. Because you know, when I was, you know, brainstorming all of this in the beginning, I came up with a list of all these different shows that we could do, but then you have to prioritize as far as which ones we're capable of doing, and which ones might draw an audience, and which ones, you know, but the list is rather extensive, and I don't think we'll ever get to all of them. But it's, you know, it's just, oh, we could do this, and oh, we could do that, and you know, your one idea leads to another idea leads to another idea, and suddenly it's this massive undertaking, and you have to kind of compartmentalize and pull back and say, okay, we're not going to do that yet. We have to do this first, and before we do that, this has to happen. So we're strategizing a lot more this year. Hopefully very carefully following a plan so that when we get to those steps, it's easier to go to the next thing and to the next thing and build on what we've got so far.
I guess you would want to link some of them together. I know there's a great number of television shows. They always have a magazine associated with this, and they sell products, frankly, along with it, T-shirts for Merrily, and sometimes they have games that go along with it.
We've been talking about that. We've been talking about, you know, the T-shirts and the mugs and posters and that kind of thing. So that's in the to-do list at some point, but we haven't rolled those out yet.
Okay, so where is the best place for the folks to go? Sci-Fi for Me, and it's a number 4.
Yes.
Sci-Fi4Me.com. Is that the best place to go? Should they go for your YouTube channel?
Either one works. Sci-Fi4Me.com will have, there is a link to the Twitch and the YouTube there. And so, you know, people can go wherever. You can find us on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. So those three things. We're also on Pinterest, which is kind of a specialized thing because all of the boards that we've put on Pinterest focus specifically on cosplay because that's a big thing in the fandom community. So we've dedicated our Pinterest channel to cosplayers, and our Instagram video channel eventually will coordinate with that and be cosplay-centric as well. We've got the Instagram page, the Instagram account where we're just posting photos. But then we'll also do Instagram TV, which is a new venture that they've rolled out that we're, right now, we're still in the planning phase of figuring out how we're going to take advantage of that new medium.
Oh, of course. And, you know, people being what they are, there's probably people right now thinking, oh, I have an idea for a show that I would like to do for him. Do you welcome that, or do you want them to have it more planned out on paper, what the cost would be, all of that?
I think eventually we're open to that. Right now, we're still in the process of getting our own team together and our own programming set in place. You know, I would like nothing more than for Sci-Fi for Me TV at some point to be like a broadcast or a cable network where, you know, we're the network and we buy a show from a producer, but we're not there yet. A lot of that has to do with, you know, again, manpower, money, resources, time, all of that. But as we get bigger, we're certainly going to be open to that kind of thing.
This kind of genre has just exploded. I mean, the Marvels are all over the films. They're all over the CW channel. Flash is confusing. They keep going back and forth.
I hadn't seen it for a while.
I couldn't tell if they were on an alternative world or in a different time.
Well, yes. Yeah, all of the above.
Yeah.
We've seen a huge proliferation of the capes, the superhero programs. At this point right now, and a lot of people have made the joke, the CW network just needs to change their name to the DC network because it's all DC comic shows. And, you know, they just announced that they're going to be shooting a pilot for Batwoman, which is going to be, I think, the 7th or 8th DC Comics television show that's on that network. It's not just everywhere else. It's there. So, you know, it's... been very successful, very popular. The DC movies, not so much, but now with the success of Wonder Woman and now Aquaman, Aquaman has surpassed all of the DC Universe movies in terms of box office now, and it's well on its way to $1 billion by the time it gets done. And that's something not even Justice League did. So those movies may be finally catching up to what Marvel's been doing for the last 10 years. But Marvel's about to roll out a brand new phase with, you know, Captain Marvel and the next Spider-Man movie and a sequel to Doctor Strange. And you've got the new Avengers Endgame that's going to be coming out this year. So they're poised for probably another billion and a half on what they've got coming out in the next couple of years.
Yeah, when I was a little kid, it was all the comics. They were either 10 cents and an annual was a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very popular. They were always sold out.
They have gotten a little bit more expensive than that by now.
Really?
A little bit. And that's another thing that we've been keeping an eye on. The comics industry itself is right now going through some growing pains.
Why buy a comic in a store when you can go online and just see it on the screen?
Well, it's not just that. Some creators, some stories have experienced a little bit of blowback on the political front because, as we've seen in other facets of the culture, you have this divide between people that want X and people that want Z, and the difficulty, the challenge has been, how do you tell a good story that entertains people, whether your politics are the same or not? And that's where we are now. We saw it in the gaming culture a few years ago with Gamergate, and now we're seeing it in the comics industry. We saw it in the literary world with Hugo Awards. There is, as much as some people would like to deny it, that culture war has reached genre, has reached the fandom. And there are some books that are wrong think, and there are some books that are acceptable think. And we are actually, I think, living in 1984. And I like to tell people, you know, 1984 was a warning, not an instruction manual, because it really does seem like that's where we are at some point.
Yeah, it does. It does. Sometimes, and, you know, people can go too far sometimes with the politics and the thinkings, and they have to realize that the audience wants an entertaining story, you know, that they can really get into.
Right, and you have fans that are out there saying, we just want a story that's going to entertain us, uh-huh, not preach to us. And the professionals that are writing those stories are saying, well, you're not my audience, then don't buy my book. Huh. And that's very bad customer service, for one thing. It's also unprofessional. We're starting to see some fallout from that, where people are starting to get fired, suspended, not necessarily put in their place, because they don't see that they've done anything wrong. But from a customer service standpoint, from a sales bottom line standpoint, you're hurting the brand by attacking your audience, the people who are supposed to purchase your product. And hopefully, we're going to start to see that kind of turn around a little bit, and everybody's going to be able to calm down and deal with each other a little bit more respectfully this year.
Sure. Well, hopefully. They do a lot of things that even I thought was questionable, and I'm no expert. They killed off Superman. They brought him back in another form.
It's a comic book death.
So they had to, I guess, reboot is what they did, from what I understand.
DC has rebooted several times. When they launched the New 52 initiative, a lot of people were not happy with the direction they were taking with it. And a few years ago, they rebooted with an initiative called Rebirth. And that was very well received. And it was essentially an apology card to the fans to start out with. It was basically DC acknowledging that they messed up. New 52 was supposed to attract new readers, but in the process, they alienated all of the existing readers.
Yes, they did.
And that wasn't part of the plan. And they finally, after about 5 years, they finally said, you know, we got to rethink this. And so they hit another reboot, reset button. Marvel has rebooted and reset several times. So it's an ongoing, constant churn with the major publishers of comic books, because you got to keep it fresh for a new audience.
Sure. Well, in the few minutes we have left, what do you want the audience to know? Is the your rebranding is coming soon, and they can expect what, when, where, and how?
Rebranding is going on now. We have launched new shows on our YouTube and Twitch channels, and you can find everything, links to everything, over at sci-fi4me.com. Our podcasts are the next thing in the sequence of events we have to reboot and reset, but those are going to be available in a number of different places, like iTunes and Stitcher and those kind of things. And if there are events that you're interested in seeing us cover, or anybody that's out there who's planning to go to an event, this is a point of pride for us. We have on our website a list of conventions that right now is number, we have 1,375 events worldwide listed on this thing. And it is, to my knowledge, the most extensive, most current, most up-to-date list of conventions anywhere in the world. And we keep adding to it. We keep finding other conventions that we're going to add to this thing. So anywhere in the world, if you're planning to go to a convention anytime, you'll find it there.
And once again, because we know in radio the repetition gets the message across,
right.
How would you most like them to find out about you? I assume going to your website would be one way.
Yeah,
sci-fi4me, and it's a number 4, sci-fi4me.com. Anywhere else, you mentioned the YouTube channel.
YouTube and Twitch, just search sci-fi4me with the number 4, and you get right there to it.
Okay, and I suppose one site will lead you to through connections to other sites as well,
yep.
To make it a little easier.
It's all connected
for the common man and woman.
That's right,
out there in the real universe. I guess this is the real universe, not necessarily there's a Marvel universe, there's a DC universe, and guys like me get confused, Jason. We need help.
That's right.
And
that's okay.
What you're doing will help with that, probably.
Well, we're doing our best.
Yeah, thank you. Jason Hunt, Editor-in-Chief of Sci-Fi for Me. Their website is sci-fi4me.com. And it's kind of be, I guess, from what we've learned here, a mix of news and talk and live events and all that you have planned. You're a director, so you know how to put all this together.
Right.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jason Hunt, the Editor-in-Chief of Sci-Fi for Me. Go to one of their sites and check out and learn what you might want to do from that. It's their 10th anniversary in March, and it sounds like they have some big things planned. So we'll have Jason back, and we'll see how much it's grown since then. All right.
Looking forward to it.
Nice talking with you. We're going to take our break. When we return, we're going to talk about an old-fashioned murder mystery that's going on out in Independence when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. It's time to take a look back at the movie year. Here's my list of the 10 best films of 2018. At 10, Hearts Beat Loud is a charming, low-key comic father-daughter drama that's sweet-natured and has an appealing pop score. At number 9, director star John Krasinski delivers something original with the genuinely scary creep fest, A Quiet Place. It's a skillfully made and truly scary sci-fi opus. At number 8, Black Klansman tells the remarkable true story of a black police officer who infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan. Director Spike Lee's comic drama is oh so relevant in contemporary America. At number 7, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is a wildly imaginative, energetic animated Marvel epic that finally captures Spider-Man's cheeky humor. At number 6, The Guilty is a riveting Danish thriller about a police officer at an emergency call center who desperately tries to help a caller who turns out to be a kidnap victim. At number 5, Eighth Grade is a poignant, realistic, and beautifully acted look at the angst of adolescence that will transport you back to a time when hormones and social pressures had you in an emotional knot. At number 4, Green Book is a feel-good true story about an African-American concert pianist and his Italian-American driver who experienced some ups and downs on a tour of the Deep South in 1960. At number 3, the documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor is a surprising and loving portrait of famed children's TV icon Fred Rogers. At number 2, Roma is a shoe-in for the Best Foreign Language Oscar. It's an artful and heartfelt recollection of Alfonso Cuarón's childhood memories in Mexico City. And the number one, Widows, is a potent and beautifully acted heist movie that features a powerhouse performance from Viola Davis. Check out the podcast of this segment on KKFI.org to also see my list of the worst films of the year. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
KKFI is volunteer-powered, but relies on financial support from the community. You can share information about your organization or event with our supporters when you become a community marketing partner. Learn more at kkfi.org/marketing.
In a special episode of Interfaith Voices, we hear stories from you, our listeners. Stories about coming together and finding where you belong.
With my hair still covered, someone rolled down their window and screamed, "Go back to where you belong. Back to where you belong. But I belong here."
That's next time on the show.
Tuesday at noon, right after Link's Mix.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoge, your host. We're going to journey out to Independence now, where they are doing what I'm going to call a follow-up. Last year they did Ravenscroft, a mystery set in the, probably Welsh countryside.
Yes.
And this is also,
in the Welsh
kind
countryside,
of a follow-up,
yes,
insofar as we have the same detective in the show.
That's right.
And with us, some of the members of the cast and the director of the show, Emerson Rapp III, is with us. He is the director of the show. He has appeared in the film Paragon. He has been with CTI, The Barn Players, Blue Springs Theater, the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, and probably best known for Bottoms Up Sketch Comedy Group, which he is also involved in.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you here with us. Mary Morris is with us as well. She plays the role of Mrs. English. How apropos for a British-style play.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder if the names really weren't very thought-provoking.
Mary has appeared also at the Renaissance Festival, with the Playwrights Festival in Independence. She has been with Blue Springs Theater. Anything else you'd like to promote about yourself?
No, that pretty much sums it up.
And you're on the board.
I am on the board of City Theater. I've recently, for 4 years, I was the secretary, and then I've just recently taken on box office chair, so I switched hats with somebody else, so we keep ourselves busy.
Well,
I'm also the special events coordinator.
City Theater of Independence is quite lucky, in my opinion. They have a permanent home, which a lot of theater groups don't have.
This is true.
Apropos the Barn Players, of course, had to move out of Mission over to Northeast Kansas City, and they have a lot of volunteers at City Theater. Mm-hmm. And some theater groups are often short on volunteers.
We can always use more volunteers, so I would never say we have a lot, but it's always something we're always looking to expand our volunteer base.
Nice to have you with us as well. Lindsay Weaver is with us. She was here not too long ago here with the Alcott Arts Center, where she directed, it was a Shakespeare in the Parking Lot.
Yes, that one was called Witty Fools and Foolish Wits. It was a fun little piece I put together.
I'll bet it was. You have City Theater of Independence, of course, the Alcott Arts Center, where you directed the show there.
It was The Way It Goes. It's a working title right now, so it may change. It's with IX Productions. It's a film that we're very, very close to wrapping.
Oh, is that exciting?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very exciting. It's been a long time in the making.
Oh, it's a different medium.
It is.
The theater and films are two entirely different styles of acting, as we've gone on a great length with
absolutely,
other actors before.
Yes.
Emerson also was involved in a movie.
Oh yeah, it's been a minute since I've done any sort of film production, but knowing what goes into it, a lot more rehearsal, but a lot less payoff in my mind. Right? It's like, oh, I was just on, oh, and there I go right there. So real quick, and I was like, man, that just seemed like I was there a lot longer than before. So, oh. Completely different beast, absolutely.
Yeah, when I looked Emerson up and the filmography, that's the one that was featured.
Yes.
So that's really all I know about. But this one is called Widdershins.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, a follow-up to Ravenscroft. So we follow the same detective a little further on in his career?
Yes, that's correct. We see the return of Inspector Ruffing, played by Eli right here to my left. And it's an interesting play because it just opens up with an entire family that has disappeared No trace to be found. Food still on the table, the fire still roaring, and the only clue is a piece of paper left on a table with the word Widdershins on it. And Widdershins, it's actually an old, I'll say, fairy tale word, which means counterclockwise. But you go back even further, it's a druid term. And this druid term really kind of evokes a lot of mystery that goes into the story. And you kind of wonder, well, how much of this was really portrayed by the family, and how much of this do the druids or any of this mystery really have to go with the disappearance of this family? So it's really quite interesting, and like any Don Nigro play, you have a lot of flashbacks. You have a lot of moments where you're looking back into what may or may not be a favorable flashback of this family. So you really get to see multiple sides of a lot of characters.
Eli Wiesemeyer plays the role of Ruffing.
Inspector John Ruffing, yeah.
Is this a bigger challenge than there was solving this mystery, than there was in, for instance, Ravenscroft?
Well, actually, it's. I'm trying to remember in Ravenscroft who was the...
He was new to CTI. I don't remember the actor.
Because I'm actually... This is my first Don Nigro play. But it is a progression.
Yes. I really wanted to make sure that Eli had his own interpretation of the character, too, because I think one of the challenges that we had with this, just because it's a mystery, it takes place in the English countryside, and I think a lot of people would almost take it too over the top, too farcical even, where it's like, oh, be very, very proper. No, I mean, these are human stories with a lot of human impact, so I wanted to make sure that I kind of kept him away from, like, have you seen the show? Because I want you to stay away from it a little bit myself, too. So maybe that was me kind of guarding my actors. Like, I just want to see how you work with my interpretation. So he can tell you if I'm doing a good job or not, but I'm twisting his arm right now, so we'll see.
No, he's doing a fantastic job.
I've done a couple of Agatha Christie's, and it sounds very similar to me. Agatha Christie plays in my time, and I'll always remember on one occasion the director didn't give us the last 7 pages of the script because she didn't want us to anticipate and add to our character in a way that we might anticipate what happened.
Oh, that's, you're absolutely right, because one thing I really wanted to work with the characters, first day I got everyone together, and they can all talk to their motivations, but I made sure to write them a secret motivation for their eyes only. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I wanted to do that in secret was so they would have their own secrets going through the process. And, you know, especially being with this show for now 5-6 weeks, they are starting to figure out, well, maybe not... Anne might not be completely honest with Ruffing, or Ruffing might not even be completely honest with his fellow inspectors as well. So I really want to, you know, dive into that as well. I love that idea of kind of hiding script pages now. I might have to do that.
Yeah, if you had done that, I wouldn't have been happy with that.
Yeah, just kind of rip out the last pages of each one.
it was probably 2 weeks before... The date of the opening show before we got those pages.
Oh, wow.
It only really affected, of course, a couple of characters, because in true Christie style, everyone meets together at the end. Everyone is still alive. Meets together at the end, and where everything is revealed.
Oh, yeah. Reveal.
Now, there is quite a reveal. I won't give away if everyone makes it to the end of the play or not, but I think that's definitely part of, you know, keeping the mystery there. It's like, wait a second. I thought this person was supposed to be in another room, or this person was supposed to be talking with another person. It has so many levels, and I really appreciate even talking with Don Nigro about it as well. You know, one of the benefits of working with a newly written piece, I believe this has only been written 10-12 years ago, is that Don Nigro, still alive, and as luck would have it, I was able to reach out to him, and I asked, if there's one thing you would just yell and scream at a director for doing, what would one thing you would like to recommend? And he said, don't play it for laughs. Mm. There's quite a bit of humor throughout. I mean, you know, you got a lot of this English properness. I mean, Agatha Christie, there are some moments in there as well that's quite humorous, but I think he tries to steer away from, I guess, those stereotypes. And I definitely believe in that, where it's, you know, make sure you're not trying to yuck it up too much, so to speak. Was it 10 years ago in 2009, yeah. Cool. So, no, I really appreciate being one of the, I'll say one of the first directors really to dig my teeth into this play and not have a lot to go off of. So, get to be a little bit more creative that way as well, too.
Well, he was probably very appreciative that you consulted and asked his opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as much as I want to put my own spin on it, if I can get any sort of input from the playwright, you know, myself being a playwright in my spare time, which means, you know, an unpaid playwright, so to speak, I definitely want to see what they think of the play, what they really want to bring as a theme to the entire show as well, too.
Mary, as Mrs. English, are you one of the family that disappears? And what have you done to cause you to disappear?
Well, now, I will say that, yes, I am one of the people that they are looking for. So my most of my scenes will simply be a memory until, of course, things are revealed. I can't say much more than that, other than my interpretation of the character will be seen differently depending on who's telling the story at the time.
I see.
So it's like this person might be being interviewed by the inspector, so she might be recalling a time. Well, I remember that time, and then later on in the show, somebody else is going to remember something else, so I might have a different, slightly different personality, depending on who's telling my story.
So you are oblivious to what each is saying, so to speak.
I'm a memory at this time.
A memory at this time, all right. Lindsay Weaver plays the role of Ms. Ann Howard.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your character.
Ann is actually an adopted member of the family, but she is away at art school at the time of this vanishing, and so she comes back to find her home being ransacked by these inspectors, and she is just really, she's getting a lot of questions from Inspector Ruffing for a lot of the time, but she's more concerned about him wanting to find the family, and so she gives a lot of pushback. And it's been a lot of fun to play her.
Yeah, is she one of the... I'm just asking in general. Is she one of the suspected people?
I would say everyone is a suspected person. So, yes. Yeah.
Eli Biesemeyer plays... and I didn't give you a proper introduction, I realize. But you play Ruffing, of course. You've been with CTI, with Blue Springs, with Summit Theater. What show did you do at Summit?
The last one we did was Triangle Factory Fire Project. And that was a wonderful-to-do play, a terrible play. I mean, it's about a tragedy, but it was such a good play to be in that historical, you know, reminder of time where, you know, the average common man was pushed and eventually just tragic things happen, and that's a time in American history we can't forget.
And were those doors locked or unlocked? Do you have a personal opinion?
I personally think they were locked. I think they were locked, although the case was still, you know, but yeah, I think they were locked.
What is Ruffin's biggest challenge in this show? I'm making sense out of what everyone says.
Trying to find the truth. I mean, he's trying to go through all the clues, getting the truth, pulling it out of the witnesses and the testimonies of Anne and Jenny and at times the old Betty. But yeah, just trying to discern what is needed, where the truth lies, because you can't discount anything. Everything must be taken into account, and so it's things that might seem just minute or not necessary could be very important, and so just trying to find those bits and pieces. Wittershins written on a piece of paper, what does it mean? Why was it there? It's got to mean something. So
the show opens in just a few days, Thursday the 10th.
Thursday, yeah.
At 7:30 p.m. Performances continue then on Friday the 11th. at 7:30. There is a special dinner theater presentation on Saturday the 12th at 7:30. This has become a tradition with City Theater. They always have a dinner theater on the first Saturday of performances.
Yes, we do. The first Saturday is our dinner theater. It is catered by Nadler's of Lexington. This particular dinner will be featuring barbecued beef brisket with barbecue sauce, deboned chicken, breast and mushroom and gravy, green beans, gold cheese potatoes, pasta salad, white dinner rolls, assorted desserts and beverages.
And this will start at, what, an hour before curtain?
Basically, yeah.
So you won't get to eat.
No. No, I won't.
I mean, you really can't have a proper dinner theater in Kansas City without barbecue. I mean, I believe that's part of the rub right there.
That's why we use Nadler's a lot. Everyone likes the barbecue.
Yeah, all the way from Lexington. And of course, if anyone's thinking, I've made this joke before, but the food will still be warm when it gets in from Lexington.
Of course it is. It's always good and hot. Very good.
Well, how long have they been doing the dinner theaters? It's been most of the time that City Theater's been going on. I really don't know
exactly how long, but I can say that I joined CTI in 2002, and they were doing them back then.
Ah, so you're pretty much a newbie.
I guess so.
City Theater goes all the way back to the Firehouse on the Independence Square.
This is our 38th year right now. This is our 38th season.
So in the sermon scene. But there were shows even before that up on the square.
Well, but CTI is an organization. This is their 38th year as the organization.
Yeah. What's the biggest need down there? You said earlier they could always use more volunteers. Let the folks know what sort of things that they could be doing.
Well, during the run of a show, we always need help with ushers. We need people to help run box office, even just someone that sits there and helps. We need people that just... Well, it's hard to say. Each show brings its own unique needs, but we just could use extra hands.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I've been involved with CTI shows nearly a decade now, but this is my first opportunity to direct. But I'm still surprised by the help that I get from the board, not only as a director, but I've seen it as an actor. Everyone on the board is just willing to volunteer their time and... If anything, they are making a name for themselves over on the east side of Jackson County. I mean, they know how to foster not only community, but they also know how to foster the talent of people that come through. So if there's anyone that's just willing to learn about the theater, or they want to jump in and know what goes into production, CTI is an excellent, excellent organization and a nonprofit organization as well. So if they don't want to volunteer, they can always donate. I mean, KKFI knows the same thing, correct?
KKFI is always looking for new people.
Absolutely.
Things progress. You know, people decide to end their time, and you need someone to replace them. And
absolutely,
time
yes.
goes on like that. And it's the same way with community theater. Just this past weekend, someone was speaking of City Theater, and they said, you know, more than some of the other theater groups in town, City Theater seems more like a family to them.
That's a very good analogy. Even the people that are involved. We recently had our Christmas party, and just a good core people show up, and it felt like family. So, but don't talk about the white elephant gift. We don't want to talk about that one.
That'll be part of the mystery. It'll be revealed after the final curtain.
Yes.
Goes. Are there others in the cast that we might give a brief mention to, or is this it?
No, absolutely. It's a cast of 10 people. They are all magnificent, magnificent actors. And I'll say, I think community theater in Kansas City is definitely more and more a stepping stone for these actors to go into professional theater if they want. I mean, absolutely. With Eli, Lindsay, and Mary here, I am just floored by the amount of work that they've put into it, the amount that their characters have changed as well. And so... we have some of the other inspectors as well. Let's see, we have Stephen Howard. Thank you very much. Stephen Howard, along with Michael Daniels, who plays the other detective, the creative foil to Eli's character. We also have Landis Merrill, who plays a lovely, lovely maid. So, you know, obviously it can't be an English production without a maid in there as well. Along with Lindsay, to wrap up the family, we have Richard J. Burt as Mr. English, and as well as two daughters, Megan Carter and Lauren Brown, who play Felicity and Constance, respectively, and Christy Hibschman, who plays Old Betty. And I know it's been a whirlwind of a rehearsal process, because I've known now that sometimes I'll call Eli Ruffing or Ruffing Eli. I was like, I'm just going to call you the detective after a while. So it gets to be one of those things where I want to make sure that it's like, all right, I got direction for you. I don't know who I'm giving it to, but I'm giving it to this person in front of me right here, Eli.
As you put yourself in Ruffing's hat, does he suspect anyone early on? Does his mind change?
He has ideas. Mm-hmm. He thinks, you know, it may be this person after having talked to them. He doesn't know why, but he does think it might be this person. But then as he learns more, he realizes, well, it could be, but it... But then there's this other thing, and, you know, it's just there's too much going on for him to really nail it down. He doesn't really know. It's tough. I mean, he has ideas, but no, I don't say he knows anybody right out the gate.
Well, I mean, there's a lot more going on with Ruffing's character than Eli's putting on right now, because not only is he having to deal with the case, too, but...
He's got a lot of things going on in his life, like his wife... passed away, and he has he's a daughter, and he's trying to keep all of that together, and while he's also putting everything into his detective work, and it just sort of pulls him apart at the seams.
One of the lines I think is important in the show for Ruffing is when the other inspector says, "This mystery is right up your alley," because Ruffing seems to look at things from, let's say, the backside or the outside. So he thinks outside the box before that term was ever coined.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Widdershins opens this Thursday, the 10th, at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue on Friday, the 11th, at 7:30. The Saturday evening dinner theater, and you can get the dinner and have the meal and then see the show, or you can just see the show.
That is correct. We, of course, would have to have reservations if we know you're coming for supper.
Yes, and how about the number then? 816-325-7370. Would that be the number to
that
call?
That would be the number to call. You can also visit the website, City Theater, with the R spelled differently, citytheaterofindependence.org, and then you can click on a link to the Ticket Leap website, and it will give you the details of the price and the times and everything there.
Good information on that. That wraps up the first weekend, but they're coming back again. Hopefully no one will talk in between. For the second weekend, Friday the 18th at 7:30, Saturday the 19th at 7:30, and then the plan changes. A Sunday afternoon matinee on the 20th at 2 o'clock p.m. at City Theater of Independence, located in the Sermon Center. The actual address is 201 North Dodgen in Independence. If you need to MapQuest things, you need that zip code, which is 64050, but just to make it even easier for you, it's essentially at the intersection of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence, where everything seems to meet in Independence.
It is the crossroads for Independence.
You have the police station, you have City Hall not far from there, all basically in that area of Independence, where your show Widdershins will open on Thursday the 10th at 7:30 p.m. I want to thank all of you for coming today. Emerson Rapp, the third, should I say the third?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And the third in a fine line of Emerson Rapp.
Yes. I mean, all it meant is that my dad and my grandfather thought way too highly of themselves, so they needed to pass that name on.
With us, he is the director. Mary Morris plays the role of Mrs. English. You might have seen her at the Renaissance Festival as well. I don't remember if I...
Mm-hmm. It was the crazy tea duchess.
Lindsay Weaver is with us as well. She plays the role of Ms. Ann Howard. She also does art. What kind of style do you...
Purely abstract. I play with color more than anything else. And I work with resin, and I actually work with... Crayon, of all things. Yeah.
You recently had a showing at the Alcott. Anywhere
I did.
Else?
Yes. Yes, I did. I got to show a lot of my works there, and that was really wonderful. And pretty soon I'll have them online.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Eli Biesemeyer plays the role of Ruffing. Any plans for the future? Any other mysteries to solve? You'd be perfect for Agatha Christie.
That would be a lot of fun. Ooh. But no, I have nothing planned as of the moment. I sort of just go wherever the winds take me. So.
Thank you so much for being with us. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. Sam will be with us. He's going to play some of the finest jazz here in Kansas City. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you.